I noticed you didn't say anything about that, Matt. And by the way, you can't ask me that question because I'm not over 55. So there. Oh. All right. So we're going to talk a little bit about the ARBs. And I'm going to start out, but you know how on Bill O'Reilly they always talk about the spin stops here? Well, it's going to stop. Now, if you look at this, and you look at the introduction of the ACE inhibitors in the 80s and the ARBs in the 90s, you might ask yourself, what am I talking about spinning? Well, this is where bad science spun a myth. And what was the myth? The myth was that ARBs were a natural extension of ACE inhibitors, and that they were ACE inhibitors without a cough, with basically nothing whatsoever to support that. And in point of fact, the science would support that these two are entirely different classes of drugs. So, I think I will demonstrate to you that quite honestly, if you want to inhibit the renin-angiotensin system and accomplish all of the things that that would do when that system is dysregulated, the ARBs are your choice, hands over, for lots of reasons, not the least among of which is that they don't cause a problem with side effects. Now, let's look at this cascade for just a second. First of all, if you look at the classic cascade, the converting enzyme is barely a part of the renin-angiotensin system. As a matter of fact, the preferred substrate for that enzyme, by the way, is bradykinin. There are 15 substrates for that enzyme, most of them which probably have a lot more to do with the beneficial effects of the ACE inhibitors than obviously with the reduction of angiotensin II by this pathway. Now there's another little bit of fallacy here, and that has to do with the AT1 receptor and AT2 receptor subtype. If this room were full of angiotensin receptors, and I said everybody in here who's an AT2, raise your hand, I'd scarcely find about two of you. So I mean, when you start talking about AT2 receptors being stimulated by angiotensin II having a lot of effects, that may be some sort of fantasy that people who are purporting to support ACE inhibitors might try to tell you. But if what you want to do is prevent the effects of angiotensin II at the AT1 receptor, where it can cause all of this mischief in pathophysiology, what you want to do is actually block the receptor. Now, you're all familiar with slides like this. I only picked this one out to demonstrate what I'm talking about. If you take an individual and put them on an ACE inhibitor, and you measure plasma ACE activity, what you see is a suppression. 6 months out, you still have the same degree of suppression. But what you don't have is continued suppression of the production of angiotensin II. Now the question is, why does that happen? And the reason that that happens is that there are a lot of non-ACE pathways, and particularly in the human, where chymase is responsible in some organ systems for as much as 70% of the production of angiotensin II from angiotensin I. Now the problem with my colleague here is I think he's let some rat studies get in the way of his human studies. You see, Matt, the rat doesn't have chymase. And so when you go to look for things like, quote, bradykinin stimulation, you gotta be very careful that if you're gonna look at rats, they have to be two-legged. And those are the ones, obviously, that most like the ACE inhibitors. So the whole idea here is if your whole idea is to block the effects of angiotensin II, the only way you really want to do that is with an angiotensin II antagonist. Now, you can look at the genetics of the population, and I think this makes it stand out even more. For example, if you look at how polymorphisms in these whole systems tend to relate to disease, it's interesting. For example, angiotensinogen is one of the genes variants that is most closely related to the development of hypertension. But also there are individuals in the population who have polymorphisms that affect the angiotensin II type 1A receptor gene. Furthermore, there are people who have deletion insertion polymorphisms at the ACE gene, which also dictate how these people will respond to drugs. Now the reason I'm bringing this out is because I'm going to show you in a minute and talk to you about the heterogeneity of response when you take a drug, throw it into 1,000 people, and then guess which one of these genotypes they happen to have. Now, it's not that the ARB people haven't been busy. This is a list of the ARB trials, some of them. And what I'm going to do is go over, in the limited amount of time I have, some of these studies in order to demonstrate a couple of things. First of all, that these drugs are safe and effective. But secondly, to show you in some context how the development of this class of drugs has been impeded by the time in which they were introduced. First of all, let's look at heart failure. Now, this is where a little misadventure, I think, took us down a pathway that some people have taken advantage of, and I'd like to set the record straight a little bit. So I'm going to show you data from ELITE II and from the ValHealth study that both looked at patients who had reduced ejection fractions and were class 2 to 4 heart failure. This is New York Heart Association classification, and fairly substantially large studies, one having a little over 3,000 patients and one having over 5. Now, the differences in these two trials were as follows. ELITE II was a trial designed to compare the angiotensin receptor blocker losartan versus captopril, dosed, as you see here, on all-cause mortality. ValHEF was a trial that was conceived with ELITE II in mind because in this trial, ACE inhibitors were permitted, whereas in ELITE II, most of the patients were ACE naive. Therefore, in ValHEF, the angiotensin receptor blocker valsartan was added to digoxin diuretics, and 93% of the people were taking an ACE inhibitor. All-cause mortality and combined morbidity and mortality comprised two primary endpoints. Now, this trial was designed as a superiority trial. And those of you in here who are statisticians will know that in order to draw conclusions from this trial, one would have had to have the ACE inhibitor and losartan compared in such a way that there would be non-inferiority or comparability. Now, the trial was not designed that way. So you say, well, what do we do with these data? Well, I would suggest to you that this survives the British BOD study. Bloody obvious difference. There is no difference between these two. I mean, anybody who says there's a difference between those two is using statistics like a drunk uses a lamppost, more for support than for illumination. What you have here is comparability. And as a matter of fact, if you look at every one of these outcomes, whether it's hospitalization, death due to heart failure, discontinuation due to heart failure, they're comparable. The ARB is just as good as the ACE. So let's look at ValHealth. All-cause mortality and morbidity. This is what happens when you add an ARB to somebody who's already taking an ACE. And you get this nice 13% reduction, highly statistically significant, in all-cause mortality and morbidity. Now let's look at the subgroups. And what jumps out at you is this group. And who is this? These are the people who were not taking an ACE inhibitor. This is your totally ACE-naive patient who's now gotten an angiotensin receptor blocker and moved not only the point estimate, but these 95% confidence intervals so far over that I think that together with ELITE II tells you clearly that the angiotensin receptor blockers are effective. Now there's some other trials, and I'll show you some data from those too, in cardiovascular disease. The LIFE trial, I think, is probably one of the more important trials that we've had in the last 5 or 10 years, particularly relative to this class of drugs. The population, people with high blood pressure and left ventricular hypertrophy, 9,000 of them, as a matter of fact, and the treatment regimen compared a losartan-based therapy versus an atenolol-based therapy, with the primary endpoint being on acute MI, stroke, or cardiovascular death. And these are what the data look like. Here's the primary composite endpoint. Again, losartan had a risk reduction of 13%, highly statistically significant, compared to atenolol-based therapy in this group of patients. They're over 55, by the way, Matt. What about stroke? highly statistically significant. Here's the atenolol group, here's the losartan group. Once again, about a 25% reduction in stroke, losartan versus atenolol. How about in the diabetics? Here's the primary composite endpoint. An even greater reduction. Here's a 25% relative risk reduction in the primary composite endpoint, losartan-based therapy versus atenolol. And by the way, atenolol, beta blockers, one of the best anti-renin drugs we've ever had. New onset diabetes. Now, I'll grant that there are some studies, HOPE being one of them, the Captopril prevention trial being another, that have shown data similar to this. But here's losartan demonstrating on an intention to treat analysis a 25% reduction in new onset diabetes. You block the effects of angiotensin II and its adverse effects on the beta cells of the pancreas, number one. And two, you reduce all the problems with microvascular flow to skeletal muscle, and that's the payoff. Now, I'm not going to spend, I was warned by Dr. Backrus that I could spend 1 minute on the next three slides, so I'm going to do that. Here's IRMA-2, primary endpoint, timed overt proteinuria. Who wins? The ARB. Here's IDNT, primary endpoint, time to doubling of serum creatinine, end-stage renal disease, or death. Who wins? Certainly not control. Certainly not amlodipine. The ARB. Here's RENAL. Primary components, doubling of serum creatinine. Placebo, losartan. Dr. Brenner's already shown you. Who wins? The ARB. Now here's the thing that Dr. Ware totally forgot about. You see, when a patient walks into your office, you got two reasons, right? One thing is you want to make them feel better, you want to make them live longer, but you don't want to hurt them, right? You don't want to make them sick. You don't want to have them come back in the middle of the night to be intubated. You don't want their tongue to swell up, right, and become rigid right in front of your eyes. You don't want them to come in and have their wife run you out because now her husband coughs incessantly and never stops. So, what about the safety of the ARBs? Probably the only class of drugs that have ever been around in cardiovascular medicine since I've been there that have a side effect profile that's virtually indistinguishable from placebo. And in the clinical trials that I just showed you, here's the withdrawal due to AEs. And once again, here's captopril. That's an ACE inhibitor, Dr. Ware. It's right in here. The one that's kind of high up here, that's the blue one down there. And in the LIFE study, same thing. Here's atenolol. Here's losartan. And you can see in every one of these categories the beautiful side effect profile of this drug. So, here's how I would phrase it. Here's the advantages of the angiotensin receptor blockers. First of all, if you want to block angiotensin II, the science would support that the way you do that is you block the receptor. Secondly, this placebo level tolerability. You might get a little bit of bradykinin, but I'll tell you it ain't much. There is no ACE inhibitor related cough. Secondly, stimulation of the AT2 receptor may be associated with some benefits. I haven't had time to show you that. And I think the future guidelines making for lower blood pressures are going to emphasize that you need drugs you can give people that they'll actually take. There's clinical trial evidence demonstrating efficacy in lowering blood pressure. I didn't have to show you that. I think I've showed you clearly that they are effective in the treatment of heart failure. They reduce stroke in patients with hypertension and LDH, and clearly have renal and cardio protection in hypertensive diabetics. Thank you.